So I think based on the numbers that you, what we see and we talked about, they spend is somewhere around like 30 to 50K per day. And you can blink twice if I'm closer to the real numbers, or once if I'm totally wrong. Based on the numbers, yeah, I think like this is somewhere like the ballpark, I would say maybe now it's even like growing since it's January and looks like it's picking up.
This is no bullshit gaming podcast, 2.5 gamers. Sharing actionable insights, dropping knowledge from our day-to-day user acquisition, game design, and ad monetization jobs. We are definitely not discussing the latest industry news, but having so much fun. Let's not forget this is a 4 a.m. conference discussion vibe, so let's not take it too seriously.
It's very dramatic. Hello, everybody. It's 2.5 gamers. We have a special episode again. We're doing a live review. My name is Matija Lančarić.
I'm Felix Broberg.
And I'm Jakub Bremer.
And we are your hosts. We also work as consultants on the UA, admon, and the game design side. But, you know, most importantly, we have a special guest, Arthur from Madbox. Can you give us a short introduction so we know who you are and what you are doing at Madbox?
Deja. Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for having me. Really happy to be here today. A bit stressful as well, I have to admit. Yeah, I'm working as a game director at Madbox on the game PokeChamps. So basically, my background is a business school guy that was passionate about games and wanted to create universe for people and create cool experiences. I had the chance to go to Gameloft and Ubisoft before Madbox, and I was looking for a place where I could have more impact. And finally ended up finding Madbox. So I started as a producer working on many hyper-casual titles at the time. I was helping 5 or 6 teams building hyper-casual games. It was a very interesting period of, failing a lot, having a good idea, failing it, having a bad idea, failing it, having a random idea and succeeding, you don't really know why. In the end, we ended up finding out why, but you know, it's this period where you get to learn a lot. And this experience got me to game lead some projects and eventually game lead PokeChamps that validated great KPIs. We iterated it and we ended up scaling the game in August 2021. And now I'm working with a super talented team on making this game even better for players.
Nice. Yeah, we have PokeChamps on our radar for a long time, actually. I put it into our backlog, I think, a couple months ago. And I was like,
yeah,
oh, wait a second.
I think maybe April, even maybe. It was long ago. Yeah.
I think it was after after the Games Forum, because I met one of your colleagues. I think I met Thibaut or someone there. And then it was just like, okay, let's take a look at this. Honestly, I even produced like few creatives for the game with my team back in the days.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's cheating for your UA part, Maciej. That's not fair, man.
It was last year. They're not live. I checked that they're not live. Don't worry. It's fine. So very cool to have you on. So our audience, as you might have noticed, we are doing this live review with Arthur. So, now we are going to know if we are wrong, right, or what the fuck we are doing actually and talking about.
I think I'm most nervous about the ad revenue, but let's see.
Yeah, you should be. You should be.
It's hardest to get right because it's just pure estimates.
Yeah, you should be. Because, well, I got this feedback about one of my previous episodes where I talked about UA that I was absolutely correct. So let's see.
Mm. Well, will you this time? Helps, I was off by 50% last time, so.
I mean, look, we used the external data and I used external tools and like Sensor Tower and then all like Data AI as well for like estimating the spend of Monopoly Go. And oh boy, what a shitstorm that was when I published the article with Neil. But don't worry, we actually recorded a podcast with Joseph Kim from Game Makers yesterday. So it's going to be on our...
Shitstorm continues.
It's going to be on our podcast and his podcast as well. So it's another crossover episode. But enough of this bullshit. Let's dive into PokeChamps. Jakub, can we start with you?
Yeah, I guess.
And also, Arthur, anytime you want to jump in and say, bullshit, please do so.
You are a bullshit meter. And if we say something that you don't agree with, you need to call us out and tell us that we are wrong. And I hope this happens a lot, because that's when the magic happens.
Or even if you want to add something of a background of what has happened.
With pleasure.
You know,
with pleasure.
Whatever you can share. We'll be glad.
So don't be nervous. Everything is fine. So you are the bullshit police, like Felix mentioned. Yeah.
Sounds good.
License to kill.
Oh, yeah.
So a little bit of a history lesson. What I got to dig up. Just looking at the current charts of Pocket Champs. As I was kind of going through it, the first one I saw being soft launched on January 31st, 2021. Here we have a chart of revenue and downloads. Based on that, we would see that the global launch of the game happened actually somewhere at August 2022, where we can see like a clear on-ramp of downloads to something like 120k a day. And then a little bit of a decline, and then I would say kind of stabilization.
On
the revenue side, it's like it's a more granular picture here, because on the revenue side, we could see the spike there on the global launch to something like 70k a day, then like decline to like March last year to like 20k, and then suddenly there's a pretty big spike, and hockey stick continues to like 100k IAP revenue a day. As I was looking through like overall numbers, lifetime numbers says 35 million downloads, 30 million IAP revenue only without counting the ad revenue. December numbers landed at 1.5 million downloads and 2.6 IAP revenue only. And currently the game is doing something around 100k IAP revenue a day and 70k downloads a day. So that, I guess,
I would just jump in and use our sadness multiplier. So if we are looking at these
explain
numbers,
what the sadness multiplier is for our dear listeners and Arthur.
Okay, so the sadness multiplier is basically we had these discussions with different studios, which they said you're wrong or right. Based on the real numbers, we kind of developed this term sadness multiplier, because every time we're looking at Sensor Tower data or any other external tool, we need to multiply the numbers by 1.5, sometimes by 2, depends on the amount of data. So usually when we see 30 million in up revenues in Sensor Tower, it can be maybe 40 or something between the 30 to 45 or maybe 50. So I'm a little bit more conservative and say, in my opinion, overall the revenues would be 40 million, somewhere around that. On IIP side only. So I guess you are earning way more on the ads as well. So, which is.
I think it's something around that. Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
Okay.
That's very, very good.
Glad that we are not completely wrong.
No.
I mean,
wrong.
You know,
you're
like we
the
developed
right
the sadness multiplier quite well.
The sadness multiplier makes us happy.
Yeah.
It's the happiness multiplier in the end.
Yeah.
Going to the game design part, I was very surprised when I was playing the game, because I thought it was kind of more player input heavy, or like I don't know why I did that, you know, when I was putting into our back catalog when Matej mentioned it, but it was actually, it has very, very interesting design around the fully automated gameplay. So if we would run through like the basic core loop, we have our Pocket Champ or whatever. It's pretty much the character here.
It's a carrot.
I think that's a parrot skin. I just missed the strawberry skin with the event yesterday, unfortunately. Anyway, going into the gameplay, the interesting part actually starts even before the gameplay starts, because there are these stats which are very, very important, meaning there's four different vectors: run, swim, climb, and fly of transportation that the game is pretty much built around. We can see that there's the usual Clash Royale gacha progression. I'll get to that later, but the core gameplay mechanics are more interesting one. So actually the whole tactics, or let's say player input, starts before the game, where it's very, very important to select the right gadget for the track. Because if I understood correctly, the four stats are kind of baseline levels that I'm still upgrading through like chests and like my progression throughout the game. And then the gadgets affect those stats based on the terrain of the track. So for instance, here that we see, for those just not seeing the video, we have some kind of a straight line that's been cut out into segments, which means that between the segments I fly, on the segments I run, or if there's water, I swim. Yeah. Or there could be also climbing segments if there's elevation, but it's not here. It's like actually the opposite. So, for instance, here, actually, the game gives me some kind of a boost for specific gear. And that gear is sport one. So the gear actually has multiple vectors also, where those are categories that pretty much the tag words that is being played with, such as like sport one, mecha one, whatever, like different taglines that you can imagine as the usual, like Charmander, Pikachu, Squirtle elements that are pretty much being streamlined into the game. And then when I select the gear, I press the race button, it kind of collects the champions, which I think a lot of them are bots, unfortunately. And then it goes into the gameplay.
Why unfortunately?
Why is that? Yeah, it's like matching is very hard. But let's see what Arthur has to say on that.
Yeah, like, well. I would also like to hear that. And then the race pretty much goes without any of my kind of player input. I just kind of see it. And yeah, I can put some smileys there. And like, yeah.
Which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I'm last here. We're going to push because, yeah, we had the flying gear. Yeah, and we landed on fourth place, which is unfortunately the place which is the cutoff for trophy loss.
What happened to you in the last episodes? You suck in every game we talk about.
You're really bad.
Yeah, you're really bad. Yeah.
Really? What's your level? Tell me, what's your trophy level?
Okay, yeah, let's ask Arthur last, and I'm going to tell you, because mine is 3,100.
You pushed yourself.
That's nice. But it's still less than Jakub, right? You're 5K.
It's always less than Jakub.
It's always less than Jakub because Jakub is cheating on his PC.
Yeah, he plays only on PC.
So what? Terrible.
No, it's fine. Yeah, you're good. Yeah, okay. Fine.
Machi, what's your level?
I would rather not say.
Oh.
There we go.
Arthur, but there we go. Level?
Like, come on. Like, I can play only one game in like at the time. So you play two games at a time. So, you know, you're cheating. So...
Let's just say that. Yeah, so that was the main kind of interaction regarding the player, like strategy and stuff, like how this kind of system works. I think it's very elegant in a way that it offers the usual, like, you know, place square into square, triangle into triangle kind of solutions. It actually makes you think a little bit because, let's say, if I go into some different tracks here in the event section...
You need to change the gear based on the track.
Yeah, basically. You need to... Some tracks literally, like, even have so much restrictions that, you know, there's a very strong push to upgrade other parts of your collection because, for instance, this track, it requires something that I don't even have. So... Because there's, you know, there's always the, like, two models how to approach this. There's like soft limit and hard limit. Soft limit is like we allow you to, like, you know, compete with your shitty gear and you will be just banging your head against the wall. We're okay with that. Or we just put like a hard restriction and you can't even compete with it. And which I think is like both has its trade-offs. This is probably better because, you know, I'm not pretty much banging my head against the wall. I won't even be kind of losing all the time, which is probably best for the audience here. But if you look at the other kind of events there, again, different sections. For instance, here we have a nice section where there's a climb section, again, two water kind of parts there. Yeah. Yep.
No, it's running parts, actually. But maybe the color was a bit misleading.
Sorry. But the interesting part here, what I wanted to mention is that, let's say, those gear aren't really like just like power progressions. For instance, let's say swimming one. So let's say there's three different swimming gears and each, I would say, have their own kind of place where they will shine. Because, for instance, the swimming gear is like faster by default. It's the common one, is the one that you always get first, but it's kind of assumes that you have something like there will be a lot of water surfaces. Then you have the sailboard one, where you have boost on multiple sections, which we could apply also here because there are multiple sections. Yeah. And there are the water backpack one, which is like the more you swim, the faster you go, which again implies completely different tracks. So you already see the decision here. For instance, if this would be like pure kind of water surface, I would probably select this one because it would speed me up. Because there are these like run and swim switches, I will probably select this one because this gives me probably there's more running surface, so I would say something for running. But anyway, just for sake of example, I would select this one. I've seen even like this kind of nice parameterization between the gear. I guess that was like one of the hardest part regarding the design, to how to create enough of a collection for player choices to be enough strategic and engaging, and also to create the input for players to have the incentive to upgrade them all, because as we all know, that's the death of every gacha. If you like one part of your equipment can solve all your problems. So that's I think that's done here very, very cleverly. Continuing there with the progression, as I said, there's like pretty big kind of a like how much stuff you can collect there.
Pool of gadgets.
Yeah, pool of gadgets. So there's like 24 from the trophy row, 23 for events.
Would you say gachapool?
Yeah, the, okay. The gachapool is very interesting here actually, because we have the usual. Let me get that. We have the usual Clash Royale shard gacha here, which is, you know.
Do you see like how excited he is? Like this is the because this is the most excitement.
There's nice iteration within the game. You actually learn something that this new thing it works, because what the game does is it has the usual like Clash Royale shard gacha, which is as always like gold scarcity driven economy. I mean soft currency, where you have always more parts to upgrade than you have gold to upgrade for. Like this is the number one rule here. The other rule here that these things are kind of complementary, or let's say you need all of them. They are kind of pieces. You don't really kind of, let's say, let me just focus on one legendary and it solves all my problems. It's not power progression, so that's great, because I need to upgrade all of them in order to progress in those different modes and different types of tracks. But the other interesting part that these tokens are kind of mixed into the pool. So you're not only getting the, I think, yeah, here we see. So we're not only getting cards for the gadgets, we're also getting these kind of training tokens for different kind of those four like terrain vectors. Even the chests have different symbols between them, meaning that they have an affinity towards some kind of a, let's say, for instance, now I guess I want to probably select some kind of swim one, because that's my lower attributes, and I, you know, don't want to pretty much abandon one of the attributes, because then I will get stuck or something. Yeah. So that's done very, very cleverly. And then the like one of the other very interesting thing for me, let me open one chest here. We can probably show that we have the usual kind of soft currency, hard currency, running points. And then there's a choose mechanic. So sometimes you have to choose which one you want to pick, which is very good. Again, more strategic options.
It's amazing.
And then the best part is there's always an upsell, which is very, very clever.
Rewarded ad.
In every chest, there's always an upsell. It's not rewarded ad always. Sometimes it's just hard currency, but there's usually always an upsell, which is very, very good. And I think this is pretty smart. So that's there for the like progression. Yeah, here we go.
Wait, Reamer, let's get Arthur in here and just ask him about the bots. Are they real? Are they bots? Yes.
I could feel you really wanted to know about it. Yeah, it's a very interesting question, because when we started the game, obviously we went full bots to just iterate on the game and see how it works. And we had a tons of questions around what's the best design for these opponents, because of course you tend to master more bots and you can provide a better experience. And we ended up finding a system where we just using online player datas, it's profiles, online player profiles that you would use in the game. Sometimes we override some aspect of it, but it's mostly player profiles from players from the store. But so we can use it the way we want, kind of.
Not bots.
This ghost. It's okay. Both.
A version of bots. Yeah.
Yeah, with tweaks on the matchmaking depending on what we need. But overall, it's ghost.
How much time you would say it would you take when you say like we're satisfied with how matchmaking works? Because I think this is one of the biggest problems that games face.
Definitely. For us, it's a very special case, because most of the games that do PvP are skill-based games, and the skill involved in Pocket Champ is quite low. It's a lot of meta systems.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very small. So it's very hard for us to matchmake your own how good you play the game. So it has been quite challenging to find how we can matchmake players, and a lot of the matchmaking comes down to your ranking, which is very related to how powerful you are. So I would say we're not happy yet with how matchmaking works, and we would like to evolve how you progress in the game and how we can matchmake you with players in a meaningful way. But I think in like 3-4 months at the beginning of the game, we managed to get something that was like quite okay, and that some rules, big rules that would work overall for your progression and make it fun all along. So
yeah, the perfect matchmaking doesn't exist yet.
No. Yeah, yeah. Like that's the usual answer. Like, how satisfied are we with matchmaking? We're not, because it's like always an iterative process, goes
always
forever.
Working on it. It's like,
I remember that, like, literally when we were working on like when I was working on Battle Legion, we would literally do like matchmaking kind of like hand-holding thing there, which would like increase the win rate ratio for early players and something, and suddenly it like broke down and like, why is the retention so bad? Oh, this thing broke down and the matchmaking is actually working like it should without the player helper. So yeah, that's what you get there. So whoever thinks like matchmaking is always fair is not, and it shouldn't be fair, because it always needs to be like in favor of players. Of
what's the thinking behind there? I felt like I lost maybe every 6th to 9th race. Is there like any thinking behind that, or was it just me making poor choices?
I'm not sure, but no, I'm sure you did the perfect choices.
But, it's half gamer, I would say.
On the half gamer. I put ads in the game, so I'm the most hated.
No, there's no rule for you to lose on like on a rate that we can control. It's really just systems that behave. So, I mean, you're going to go up in ranking, and the higher you go in ranking, the stronger your opponents are. So you're going to get stuck, you're going to lose, and then you're
going
to upgrade your chance
again. Basically. No.
Yeah, definitely. There's no hidden system. I was really in favor of that at the beginning of the game, because I knew very little about how to make these games actually fun. And it was a terrible mistake, because you end up not controlling the player experience because your system override what you think it's going to do. So I think a very old, good Excel file with a good curve is always better than a strange system that overrides everything.
Nice.
Yeah, this is the big meat behind like PvP games that nobody sees and everybody assumes is easy to do, but it's actually like so much work to kind of get done right. And like, and then you have people assuming that like, oh, I'm not playing bots, I'm playing group players. Sure.
Yeah, Jesus. I always know like when I win too much, it's just definitely bots. And then later down the line, when I'm actually matchmaking with the real, I think real players, I'm losing all the time.
Yeah, like my guess is that the matchmaking is completely different on the event side, because when I was going there, like I'm like, for instance, this one, I'm stuck there from day one. Like I just don't have any of the recommended gadgets for
the
track.
You know why? I know why.
Because I didn't pay.
No, because you suck.
Very little skills involved, but enough is involved that you lose.
I literally like tried all of the things that could like work here. Even like maybe these water boosts will like on this short section would give me the edge. No, it didn't. It's just like, yeah, because this is like at some point these run challenges. I guess those are the probably the best conversion mechanisms for your conversions here, because they're turning to duels. So you're not like cannot hide within the like whatever third place, second place on the leaderboard. The literal duels. If you lose a duel, yeah, you need to win. And then if you don't have like the recommended gear, you're usually paired against the guy with the recommended gear. So there you go.
Yeah, you will eventually win if you manage to train enough. But yeah, you can get stuck for a good amount of time. And there's this feeling where you know you're going to get something cool if you finish the event. So spending a bit on one training bag or on something will allow you to get what you have and then go on the event, finish it. So it's actually quite interesting. And we're mostly using these events as a way for players to have a progression that is a bit splitted from the main trophy road that gives you the main challenges of the game, and propose other challenges, like challenges you more on one part of your collection, challenges more on, I don't know, how good you're going to be able to train. So yeah, it's a very interesting tool for us indeed to create specific challenges for players.
Yeah, and if I understand correctly, the collection is kind of split up into the trophy road and events one, meaning that the events one section only comes from events or can be only used within events, which I got wrong.
They only come from event traps.
They come from, yeah. Okay, that's good. Because then they're exclusive and they're the good conversion point, of course. Yeah.
We try to make it so. Yeah, and it's also a design principle we have where we try to have it's a collection-based game. So you want to have unique content everywhere in the game as a player. So you want to engage in the tournament feature, in the event feature, in the main progression, if you want to complete your entire collection. So it's very important for us to have unique contents there.
That sounds good. There's the like Hall of Fame mechanic also that kind of greatly supports this whole kind of thing, where you literally have this kind of sticker album that gives you this like head start things there in each factory, if I understand correctly. So I guess that's like a later feature when the collection was more robust added to kind of support the collection aspect. That's great. And like talking about the event system and this whole thing, that would be my kind of first question for you, because I was looking at old builds of the game, like really, really, really old, like November 2021, and there wasn't even any event button, or like the whole screen was kind of a little bit smaller on the side. So
I guess no more events or tournaments. What would you say would be the like biggest feature that you added from the soft launch of the game, like January 2021 that got into the game? Because I know, let's do this and then I have another question afterwards. Sorry.
One question at a time, man.
When you say biggest thing, what do you mean? The thing that had the best impact for players?
Yeah, probably. Like from product's perspective, after that soft launch, what would you say you added to the game that would be like a significant feature that moved the needle?
Well, that's a different question, because if there's like for that was aimed for players, it could be something else, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the game has had two big boosts, right? One in March of 2023, and then one in June of 2023. So they must have done two things that really made an impact.
The first one, so March 2023 is an interesting moment for us, because it's also a moment where we changed a bit our philosophy. We just scaled the game like 5 months ago, 6 months ago in August, and we had great success, and it was like a crazy moment. We've been working for years to make this game happen. We, you know, Madbox was building hyper casual games, and we chose to commit to follow our dreams and go to bigger games. So amazing moment. We scale a game. We're super happy. And we try to be like, okay, we're going to do like other top grossing games do. We're going to have live ops event. We're going to throw a lot of content, and it's going to be amazing. And after a few months, we kind of realized that we were not investing enough in, you know, making the game evolve, and we were not really taking risk. And the game was slowly declining and slowly dying. Of course, you can milk revenue out of a game by adding content, by having a lot of events, but it's just the usual trap where your game slowly goes down and dies. So we really wanted to, like, it has always been our goal to make games that you can play for years and years, and games that are played all around the world. So we felt like, okay, we're not really following our objective here, and we need to readjust. So we, beginning of 2023, we really went for taking risk, and it was a bit of a stressful moment, like bigger versions where we changed big things in the game. And the first one was an update based on progression systems, basically. So we reworked the trophy road. We gave you more objective as a player, clearer objective, reworked events. You have more challenges and more variety in the challenges that you have. And we added a bit of content. And we rebalanced the whole game, basically, like from day two, day three, the whole game has been rebalanced. So it was big risk, because when you build such an update, you can also end up crashing
the
your
player
game.
Base.
Yeah definitely. But it eventually paid off. We have a very good release pipeline. We have a very strong data team in-house as well. So we've been able to learn from what didn't work, and just have the version on store in a very good shape. And this started the growth you can see from February, March.
Rima, can you share the screen on the revenue growth?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just change that.
Because, it's quite impressive. It went from 20,000 a day to close to 40, and then up to 80 in nearly 3 months.
Yeah. That felt so good.
this is the period after like August 22... of global launch, and there's the decline that Arthur mentioned, and then somewhere here the March 2023
where turning point.
Yeah, something like snaps and like double the revenue, and so on. So on.
We also have very strong. I don't want to be like the product guy, but we also have very strong.
UA team? Oh, yeah,
UA
sure.
UA team in-house and creative teams in-house. Yeah, definitely. We need to mention them, because a lot of the success is also on their side. Like, we found very great creative at that time. We had very new opportunities that we explored as well. So that helped definitely a lot on top of the product improvements, for sure.
Yeah.
So, but you mentioned like you kind of found out what didn't work. So, what was that? If you can mention these one or two things, like, okay, well, this definitely didn't work, so we need to change that.
The most complex thing about this game is that you mostly progress with your power training. So, a lot of the challenges you're going to face, you're going to be able to overcome it by training your champ, coming back to the game, being stronger, and overpass the challenge. And it's been quite challenging to make this fun on the long run, because it's really pretty much you come back to the game, you get X power, you're stronger, and now you can advance from X, and then you're stuck and you go again. And this is fun for 7 days, maybe 14, and then it becomes less and less fun.
Yeah. Okay.
So we just had to find ways to break this progression down into smaller pieces where you have short and midterm objective, more different challenges around your gadget collection, around, a different area where you're going to race with different rules. So it's just more fun to advance towards this challenge. So I think it was a bit of content and balancing to make this progression actually fun for longer.
Yeah, sounds to me like the usual kind of RPG problem where you have everybody can eventually get stuck on the main road, and there needs to be enough content to keep the player happy until he builds up his strength to continue on the main road. Therefore, you need to have those side modes, those other metagame systems that kind of keeps them returning, even though they know they cannot progress the main road, but they still like the other parts of the game. And there's I think your current kind of events bar here, and as I said, there's so much stuff that's currently being there. The other interesting thing that I've seen there is the offer system seems very, very robust. And the upsell on the gacha chest is one thing, but the offer system is also kind of very, very strong. There's also the battle pass system there somewhere that I...
play button.
There it is. Yeah. Which is, again, done very, very good, because there's the usual thing where you complete missions that you cannot get claim for because they're part of the battle pass. So that's a very, very strong kind of conversion point right there.
Is to read out the top in-app purchases. Special offer 4 is the top one, $9.99. Special offer 5, $19.99 is the second best-selling offer. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
we're selling a lot of offers. We managed to have, I think, this balanced monetization where, as a player, every aspect of the monetization, serve its own purpose. So you want to maybe have the mission, the VIP pass, if you are very engaged players and you're willing to spend this money. But on top of that, you will still need, if you face a certain challenges and you want convert to overcome it, the offers can still be relevant. Where I think sometimes some games struggle to make their whole monetization panel valuable, it's something we manage to maintain. It's not yet perfect, but yeah, we're quite happy about it.
Yeah, I think that that's driven mainly through the point that your kind of, let's say, gacha incentive system is done very good through those tracks, because those tracks are those, Charmander, Squirtle, Pikachu elements where you definitely need the gadgets for the right track. Therefore, you need all of them, not really just one of them, which then greatly sells. And by the way, the discounts on the economy, I really like those because they're not that big, which means that you're not really undercutting your economy that much. As you see, a lot of these games, they have, on 300, 500, and trust me, players count those that you cannot bullshit them on those because they are anchored from the shop. So, I guess this was part of the rebalance package, I would guess, when the economy needed to be kind of, more robust, stronger. Yeah,
Let me answer that.
Yeah, sorry.
No problem. No, we had no issue with economy inflation. Actually, we've always been too, our economy has always been quite robust in the sense that we don't want to just discount everything and make it crazy. Mm. I think we really try to make this game fun for long. And it's very important for you as a player to understand what's the value of everything in the game. So if you have a super discounted offer, it can really change your perceived value. And maybe next time you think oh no, this item doesn't have the same value because it's very cheap in the shop, for example. So it's really something we're taking care of, maintaining a good economy that can sustain a long time and that feels valuable as a player all along your progression. So we didn't really have any issues with that in the past.
Mm, that sounds good. Last thing that I think would be a good transition to Felix is that interstitials start showing after 1,500 trophies. Until then, no interstitials.
Yes.
There you go, Felix.
Nom. So now we're on to the ad monetization part, which is interesting, because you guys have done something that's very hard. You get users to watch a boatload of interstitial ads, which is usually a retention killer. And by my estimates, I would say that majority of the ad revenue actually comes from interstitials rather than the rewarded ads.
No, that's not true.
No?
That's bullshit, I'm sorry. I was trying to find a... a tactfully candid way to say it. But no, we do way more revenue from rewarded ads. And we print a good amount of interstitial, but compared to what we're able to do with hyper casual games, it's actually way less.
Okay, interesting.
There you go.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much for listening. Yeah, let's end here. No, yeah.
God damn.
I'm sorry, Felix. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, it's good to be honest. But okay, so let's start with the rewarded placements because they're really clever, especially how it's done. Do you want to start by just showing off the rewarded placement, Remo, with maybe the cooldown for the training bags?
Yep. Yeah, it's right there. Yeah. You can see it. Okay, yeah.
So here we have the one that I think is the most clever. Most of these climbing or training bags, they're on a timer, and usually you're able to shave most of it off, but not all of it. And you can do that by watching a rewarded ad for getting minus 30 minutes on this, on this timer. And essentially, yeah, you can get it on the one that's being opened, and you can. That's on a one-day cooldown, correct?
And the five? Yes, exactly. Yeah. It resets at midnight, basically.
Yeah. And basically, the number five tells me one thing, that whoever is doing their admon really knows their thing. Because after five, if you watch more than five rewarded ads in a session, basically the recency effect comes into effect, where basically you start getting paid a bit less because the ad networks assume that you're like not paying attention. So the number five here, I'm sure it's not by accident, or is it?
No, it's not by accident. Look,
it's not the only placement in the game. So
that we try to apply in PokéChimps as well. And this one is one of them.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. And then we have the ticket offer and chest in the shop.
Ticket we saw the chest as well.
Yeah, the chest. And then after every race event, you have a bonus reward as well, which is also a very clever design feature. So you have the interstitial ad and then separated by two victory screens after or whatever happens. So basically get some distance away from the interstitial ad. Then that's when you show the opportunity to watch a rewarded ad, which is, quite clever. Basically, my thinking here is you guys just wanted to have a bit of distance between the interstitial ad, so you can still show the interstitial ad at every race, and then also the rewarded ad.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. And also the additional rewarded that you mentioned is not a systematic one. It's one you can have if you have a chest. It's basically one you're proposed if you open a chest in the game. So on the main progression, you're going to open a lot of chests. It's just the way it's designed. So from time to time, you're going to have an interstitial, then open a chest on the trophy road or anywhere in your progression. And at that moment, you might have that bonus reward with a rewarded proposed to you.
Yeah, that's the upsell one, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any no ads
so
option?
Buying anything removes interstitial ad, but I believe you never remove rewarded ads, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it, yeah. We tend to propose everything that you can get with rewarded with gems as well. So if you want to be a premium player, you can just buy gems and have the same advantages.
Did you ever consider skip it or anything like that? Ooh. Or using hard currency to skip the rewarded placements?
It's actually what we're doing in some placements. Like, for example, the bonus reward that you get in chest, you can watch an ad or get it with gems.
It's just not branded as skip it.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's not branded as a skip it. Yeah, exactly. It's more branded as a buy it with gems. So, no, we never considered that, but maybe it would be interesting in certain area of the game.
Yeah. And interstitial ads start, as Remo said, after 1,500 trophies. I'm assuming you just kind of want to get the stickiness of the app before you start plastering interstitial ads. Just out of curiosity, do you guys have any bid floors set up on interstitial ads? So you only show interstitial ads if you can get a certain ECPM price, or maybe that's too detailed.
No, it's a very interesting question, actually. We never really explored that, and I think we should. Do you think it's something that can have a good value?
Usually what you tend to do, like on big interstitial, right now, like, I thought you guys were earning mainly from interstitial ads, so I assumed, but I was wrong. I'll just say it. But usually what you do is you start experimenting. You start from maybe like $1. So basically, or $2. So basically you only show interstitial ads when you can get at least that, and you work your way up, and then you see basically on retention what earns you more in the long run. And usually what you're able to find is maybe around like $5 or $6, you find some kind of equilibrium where retention picks up so much that you don't lose any money. But it's a clever little hack, and you can do it also by geo. It's quite clever. Takes a couple of months to get right, but your admon person can definitely set up those tests quite quickly.
That's super interesting. Thank you very much for sharing.
How many people do you have in the admon team?
I think we don't have people specialized in admon.
Okay, so just, it's a combination.
Yeah, it's UA team basically. UA,
okay.
It's a classic hyper casual setup.
Makes sense.
I'm assuming also, given the fact that I saw mainly Max, AppLovin ads, you guys are 100% on AppLovin Max as a mediator,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
You could ask me if you look at the UA channels and I see AppLovin like 7 times on the one page, like, this is Max. 100%. 100% Max.
You got it. It's Max.
Nice.
All right. So here comes the ad revenue impression before we get onto estimation, before we get onto my questions. But I estimated in total, you guys are earning anywhere between 39 to 45K a day in ad revenue, which is about 40% of the overall ad revenue without taking into account the sadness multiplier. So it's probably closer to 30 or 35. That's ECPMs from late December, though, so it could be a bit inflated.
No, but it's actually quite close from the reality.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm assuming then that I estimated that your interstitials are 9 on average, and the rewarder are around 6, but maybe that's a bit too high on interstitial then, and that should be reversed.
Yeah, but it's a bit high on interstitial, right? And I think you're not that far for rewarding.
Okay.
So yeah, you can just tune down.
The numbers.
Yes, at least. Yeah. But it's interesting, like if the split is 35, maybe 40% ads and 65% IAPs, that's, I would expect like, 50-50. Oh, no. Yeah, 40-60s. Yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah. My first question is, like, I have this question so much with clients that are like interstitial ad curious. Because I think it's one of the ad units hardest to get right. Obviously, reward is really hard to get right, but you guys have such a robust economy that I think it's more interesting to listeners to kind of just ask, how did you start experimenting with interstitials? Because it can absolutely destroy retention.
We had a lot of experience with interstitial with our hyper-casual background. Mm. We scaled several big hyper-casual titles. So we could experiment with where do you want your interstitial to happen, how you want to parameter it. So it's something we knew. And to be honest, we didn't iterate that much on PokeChamps. We knew we wanted it to happen on the endgame. Mm. So it's like a moment where your gameplay is finished. But before getting your reward, so you get to see the interstitial before getting rewarded by the game. And then I think the rate, like how often you see an interstitial, was the ones we knew were the ones that don't damage too much your retention while still bringing a good amount of revenue. And we really went for that, you know, medium scenario, and we never really tweaked it again. It's something we want to iterate on because we would like to get out of interstitial little by little with the game. Like as I said, we have a long-term vision for PokeChamps. It's a game we truly believe we could bring super high in the stores and in many more players' hands. So we believe removing interstitial at some point will be valuable. But from our latest test, you know, I don't think interstitial have this much impact on retention, at least from our experience, on early retention.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a balance to find. And now we are kind of in the medium scenario that we found out was the best one from our hyper-casual experience.
Cool.
Nice.
And I can't help but notice, but there's no banner ads. What was the thinking behind
that? That's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, like I was so shocked, you know, like from the hyper-casual days, this banners, I was expecting to see it so badly.
And also you have quite high DAUs, right? So I was they would kind of make sense.
Probably. To be honest, I don't want to be too much on this is good or this is bad. But
yeah, sure.
I had this discussion a lot with the UA team. Of course, you can imagine me a little game lead that iterates on a game that is not recouping yet and it's a bit weak in monetization. And I'm like, no, I don't think we should have banners now. We want to get strong on in-app purchase first. So
yeah,
our focus has always been to build like a game that can last, a game that can be fun for long, and we really think in-app purchase is the right thing to do. Like you know, your good casual games that you can play for years. I don't think banner ads is a bad thing. It's just it's not really fitting the image we want the product to have, and I think there is a lot of things around the game metrics that is harder to measure on perceived like the player perception of the game. And I think the banner can have an impact on that. And it's an impact you would like to reassess every time you improve your game. We are still building this game. We are still iterating on the game. So it would be pretty hard for us to, you know, reassess all the time, is banner a good idea or not for players. So we chose, like, the game is profitable. It's doing good. We are aiming long term. We know we're going to keep building it. So I think it would be an interesting optimization eventually, but maybe arming our product vision and the long term of what the game can become. So we chose not to have it. From our estimate at the time, also, it was a small chunk of revenue compared to what we have with rewarded interstitials and in-app purchases. So yeah, we chose just not to have it. But maybe we should be challenged more on that and we should try it. I don't know.
I mean, it was just first thing that came into my mind as well. It's like, okay, DAU is quite high. Where are the banners, basically?
Yeah,
but I think fair enough. Like, very good answer, actually.
Yeah,
makes sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so I have two more questions, and then we'll turn it over to the UA lead, and he can show us some fun creatives. But just wanted to ask also, like, you have the most aggressive end cards I've seen on like a scaled game on rewarded ads. Like, do you guys like try to speak to your network partners to limit these end card formats, or do you just let them go completely wild?
Cool. That's an interesting information. I didn't know that we would be assessed this way, but
no, it's just the only thing. Like, I manage some clients that have like a really large daily revenue, and all the things that I realize from the ones that have a large daily ad revenue on, especially rewarded, they're very picky about end cards and how you show end cards, especially on interstitials and rewarded, because it impacts player retention so much. Even the fact that some people have considered just going on ad mob mediation to have better ad quality.
That's what,
because
I heard
the retention
as well.
Is so like much better. And what a lot of people don't know is you can actually speak to your ad networks and say like, hey, get this the shit out of my game because I don't want it there, because I shouldn't see 60-second videos with 6 clickable end cards.
My life. You should play the Tower War more than like 10 minutes. That was like 60-second videos, 10 clicks. It was just, and then it was also playable ads on top of it. I had like a heart attack at just closing the ad, just by closing it. So
I've tested this, and if you remove end cards and say 30 plus 5 and 3 clicks to exit, which I think it's fine, usually ECPM drops by about like 4-5%, but usually that offset in ECPM drop is always offset by higher retention.
No, but it's definitely something we're doing. Like, we're really taking care of making sure the experience is great under all aspects, and ads is part of it. So we're talking with the ad network and we're trying to remove everything that is too aggressive. So maybe you've been unlucky, or maybe there's something we didn't cover. I don't know. This being said, sometimes we tolerate things that are a bit in between, like an interstitial ad that can be a bit longer than 5 seconds or these things. But overall, we really try to like maintain something that is not too aggressive on that side. But it's a very interesting point that you raise, and it's really something I want to discuss with the UA team in house.
All right, last question before going over to UA. Why are there no ad-related daily missions or monthly missions?
That's a very interesting question. Actually, there are missions.
Really?
But not the way you would think they are integrated. They are just indirectly pushing you to, or encouraging you to watch ads. Because, for example, you can claim 10 daily deals. If you just claim the free one, you're going to get 1 progress in your mission. If you watch an ad, you're going to have 2, for example. You want to earn rewarded ads will help you for that. So we went for this integration that is a bit indirect, but serve, I think, the same purpose of encouraging player to progress in the game and to actually advance everywhere. But we felt like it was like the way we integrated it without having directly asking you to watch ads was more in line with the vision we have for the game, because we want VIP players to, or all players to have, you know, like this good experience where if they don't want to engage in certain aspect of the monetization, they won't get completely stuck, or they won't lose something forever. And losing one mission is a tough moment, because you can't you're gonna get slower to get your skin in the end and all of that. So yeah, we went for the indirect integration, I'd say here.
Yeah. So basically, here the 10 daily deals, that's the one that you would say is ad related to.
No, I'd say almost all of them are, because spin the fortune wheel, you can re-spin the fortune wheel with a rewarded ad. So you can double what you get here with rewarded. Claim daily deals would be, get power, you can reduce your training back times with rewarded. So yeah, I would say almost all of them are in the end like closely related to a reward, yep, a rewarded placement.
Yeah, for those wondering, like some game, what Felix is asking, some games literally put here like watch an ad mission.
Yeah. That,
that's the practice.
Yeah. All right.
Great. Yeah. Seriously, great job. Like some of the like the features, especially the five on the opening of the training bags, I think is really genius. So well done.
Thank you so much.
Well done on the UA side. It looks like you did well with your previous hyper casual games. I see a lot of inspiration in terms of the creatives in those. In those creatives. Let's see. So I'm gonna. Okay, maybe I will start. Yeah, I'm gonna start directly with this because it's a lot of it was a lot of fun and it's really clever. Yeah, I would say innovation, but I would say also take into of these like Gates creatives, because I haven't seen this before. I mean, the Gates creatives and the concept is quite old, but it's usually connected to like numbers and multipliers and then other stuff. But this was just absolutely brilliant. So if we start watching these creatives, look at the Gates. So it's not your typical numbers, but it's animals. It's amazing. Seriously, I was like, oh my god, this is perfect. I love it. And I can imagine like this is definitely not the first iteration of these Gates, and would be great to understand like how did you kind of come up with the animals, or like how did you end up with the animals. But oh my god, like it's different icons as well, and just different like takes on this. I mean, the overall concept is quite clear. Love it. Gates, perfect. But the different icons and different animals, that's I haven't seen that before. So we have a lot of these that I found in the Sensor Tower, as well as in Facebook Ads Library as well. So we have this again. And you see the combination of different animals, different visual style of those icons, and then also kind of different backgrounds as well. I love the music as well. It's just very cheerful. And also the humor in the creatives, that's what I really like. And also like a lot of male players like these types of things as well. So it's a combination of hyper-casual humor and then fail as well. I mean, the fail-stale kind of works well. And then we have... Yeah, Jakub?
No, just like for those not watching, the usual Gates creative got turned into like you choosing between animals, and then the fail ones are actually you choosing an animal that's not appropriate for a terrain. So you drown, fly down, get killed, and stuff like that.
And then
funny moment.
You have these gadgets as well. And again, like different visual styles, which is great. So I love this. It's like multiple of those. What I think this was also quite interesting.
Wait, are they not lying in any of their creatives? What?
I mean, look, you have the game which looks like hyper-casual. Why the fuck would you lie? Like, it's just like, you want to just showcase the gameplay because that's what, you know, that's why you have the low CPIs, basically. But then there are some different things. And this, I mean, I almost fell from the chair because I know a few hyper-casual games, and this was taken from, like, car. I think Hutch had this like one car game, and this is like a hyper casual mechanic. It's brilliant, and this is what we've been talking about for a long time, like using all these hyper casual kind of mechanics in the videos to get like better CPIs and find these different hyper casual mechanics that kind of suit your gameplay. It's super clever. It's super clever. It's really, and I think
this is the most fake one yet.
This was the most, because it's. Let's look at this. I mean,
it's still mobile gaming, right?
I thought this is like a My Perfect Hotel type of creative, maybe, a little bit.
Yeah, I think it was one of the inspiration, definitely.
I was like, oh yeah, 100% is this My Perfect Hotel. It can't be anything else.
Okay, well, so literally like idle gameplay.
Yeah. So this is, you know, I would say altered gameplay. But then,
it's something we're exploring. It's really something we want to explore. Like, how the player will be able to have deeper progression system, and like maybe upgrading what the machine you're training on, such things. So it's also kind of exploration for the game as well.
At a look into what Township is doing on their simulation, like the creatives, they have multiple kind of upgrades, and even it looks like different progressions in that creative, which is like 45 seconds long. You have like all the classic Golden Goblins start, and then you are upgrading the farm and everything. It could work quite well here with the gym and then the tracks and all the different gadgets. It's very interesting. And this is quite nice. This is quite old. This is quite old as well, I think. It's 52 seconds, really nicely done. And I think I saw it multiple times. Yeah, it's really nice.
It was really the worldwide launch of the game. We went for a full, fully fledged trailer. It was like, as a game maker, when you have such a trailer for a game you worked on, it's just an amazing feeling. And it ended up working well also in creative. Yeah. So, you know, it's a double win.
Exactly. It's very well made, and like the whole kind of narrative and like how it looks and like how it progresses from start to the end. You just want to watch it. You just want to see like, okay, well, how does that end up? You know, all the twists and everything. Yeah, it's great. And you see, yeah. Nice. So yeah, that's that. And then obviously we have some like UGC type of things, which is quite nice. But yeah. Oh yeah, you can hear like.
Is that a real guy? Yeah, it's a real guy.
It is. It is. Yeah, yeah. It's actually commenting like what's being done in the game. Like, yeah. So it is real person.
Who's the guy? Do you know him? Or is he just?
No, I don't know him. I would have liked, but no, I don't.
Yeah, it's random creator. But that's there, and then we have, you know, this is how it's done, Jakub. So this is how you end up first. And not suck.
It was a tutorial video for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was like, I will have one more question after finish the show reel, because something dawned on me.
What?
A different game.
A different game. Okay. So yeah, it's basically like this is quite nice actually. But yeah, so UGC type of things. Okay, so I think, I have some more. But yeah, it's mainly around the gates, which I think that it's something that works for you quite well recently in different iterations of it, which is...
It's actually the best way we found to allow players to... Because it's quite important in the creative. You want to quickly understand what's going on, and you want it to fit with your game. And if you just have the core gameplay of PokéChamps playing, it's not really clear what's going on. And the gates was a very interesting tool for the players to understand that you have to make a choice. So it's a very simplified choice between something that flies or something that swim. But in the end, it's actually the type of choice you can make in the game.
Nice.
Yeah. The issue we have with that is that often players feel like they will be in control of the champ, which is not the case, which can be frustrating for some players. So it's still something we're exploring. It's quite nice for you to understand what's going on.
Yeah. Very, very clever way. So Jakub, what's on your mind?
The question for you, Arthur, have you got any inspiration from Uma Musume Pretty Derby?
I don't think so. I don't know. Is this games?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Okay. No. Because it's a like very, very famous Japanese like horse girl racing game, and it's like also automated gameplay, and you also increase like 5 attributes of the like horse girl, and you know, pretty much you just watch the races and you train her in between. And the game was launched in February 2021, which is like 1 month before your soft launch.
Okay, yeah, I got it. I see what game you're talking about. I played very like not that much, but no specific inspiration from this game, but I'm sure they have very interesting mechanics we could look into, but no, I don't think so.
Nice.
Yeah, because I was like, where did I see like a similar screen with those 4 stats? Because yours is super unique, and like this dawned on me, like, yeah, I've seen it somewhere there. But yeah, just like off designer off topic.
Yeah, okay. So then you know, like I was looking into the creatives, and then I opened up this creative gallery, and then you see Aplavin 10 times here. It's like, oh, okay.
they need to get on Aplavin.
Yeah, it's like 100% it's max. And then we have like these creatives that we already saw, and it's like you're gonna be deaf by after watching these ads. But obviously, AppLovin, you need to have the playables, which is quite nice. So we can. Oh, I need to play this. Okay. So that's the thing. Is this kind of working, by the way? I mean, I guess it is because, well, you need to kind of play the game in playables, even though you don't play the game afterwards, right?
Yeah, but it's not working that well compared to other creatives.
Okay. Okay, nice. All right, so from what I see here, when I was looking into this, like all countries in the worldwide, obviously like the AppLovin popped up because from my understanding, you would use, well, first US, then you add tier ones, and then you open up worldwide. So, you know, there you go. But then it's like there's like YouTube, Mintegral, and I saw a lot of impressions on Instagram and Facebook, especially in US, and also TikTok. So I was like, okay, but it's interesting mix because I mean, if I look in here, like you have basically everything mm-hmm. which is available. So I use Unity is there, and I would assume you use also Moloko. But
yes, I mean, we do. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's like all these like bid machines and whatever else bullshits. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to say something, and I totally blinking on it. Never mind. Oh yeah, I know. So you are definitely running the like hybrid RAS campaigns on AppLovin, and I guess on Unity as well, and I would say Google too, since you have this like amazing split, like 40-60, which is nice. And my assumption would be, and let me just change here so I see your face when I'm talking about the estimates of spend. So I think based on the numbers that we see and we talked about, the spend is somewhere around like 30 to 50K per day. And you can blink twice if I'm closer to the real numbers, or once if I'm totally wrong. Based on the numbers, yeah, I think like this is somewhere like the ballpark. I would say maybe now it's even like growing since it's January and looks like it's picking up a little bit. And based on the retention profile, which is something I see here, so we see like, or let's say 50% day one retention, which we also know that this is kind of overestimated.
Yeah, definitely.
I think.
Yeah, retentions are well overestimated in both tools, every tool.
So yeah, day one is actually lower than that now.
Yeah, okay.
It gets lower and lower with time.
That's what I was to say. Like, there's like day 90, which is like 1.5. So if this is overestimated, then let's say it's around one. So I would say you're kind of optimizing for like my maximum like day 60 payback period, because then after day 60, it started to be quite flat. So that's why I kind of like ended up with this estimation of like 50K, maybe up and down 10K per day. So let's see. Maybe I'm totally wrong on this, but maybe it's even more. Maybe it's even more. It's like maybe.
Yeah, I think it's could be even more than that, to be honest. But yeah, I'm not a UI expert, so I'm not sure. But I think it's a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah. I would say it's a little bit more. I wanted to be conservative here, but yeah, if we are talking 50, maybe it's like 60, 70, depends on the latest numbers, because the revenue is fucking growing. So, yeah, it's growing. And honestly, it needs to be very short payback period because of the retention profile. So that's that. So
yeah,
good job.
We're really struggling with long-term retention now with the game. It's something we want to improve since the beginning, and that would really help stacking even more revenue and growing our player base. So we're really focused on that. And I think it's the main conversation we are having today at Madbox, is how do we make this game engaging for longer? Yeah. Anyway, that would completely change the way we do UA and the way we manage to optimize this game over time.
Oh yeah. I'd like that, like improvement on day 90, that would like unlock so much more budget, honestly. Like way more. Because then you could optimize for long payback period, like all the like casual games basically, and it's like it's like you can spend millions. So nice.
Hopefully one day.
Yeah, very good job. Yeah, I mean, it's on a very good trajectory towards that. towards that.
Is there anything you want to add to like the game design, admon, or UA analysis before we let you go on your merry way that you think would be interesting for listeners to kind of hear from your journey with building this game?
There's so many things I could add, but
yes.
No, I think the most interesting thing on our story and how we managed to build PocketChamps is that we really made it like it's a product we think since the beginning as an experience, a new experience, an innovative experience we want to bring for players. And thanks for your positive comment on the game. It's super nice. And we can feel that we managed to bring something that is a bit different,
yeah.
That brings an experience that is new for players. So it's been a lot of struggle and it's not an easy path. It's, you know, as failing for on your hyper casual game and failing again, but it's more looking what you're building and just trying out new things. So yeah, I think it was a very interesting adventure. And the most interesting thing for me is really what we're building today, which is, you know, aiming long-term, trying to take big creative bets, make the game evolve. As we can see on many top grossing games tend to do and reinvent themselves. I'm thinking the Supercell games, of course,
yeah.
But many games are doing as well. And I think it's what makes like the story behind this game unique. It what makes the, you know, the current growth we're experiencing that feels super good also for us, because it's also, you know, yeah, it's encouraging. It's an human adventure on top of everything. And when you see that it pays off, feels quite good. So
nice.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you do the typical round to end up here, I would do 9 out of 10 realistic remo here, because like really outstanding job on like taking something that's like not really like, you know, gone to hell on the market and like pushing it somewhere completely else. Especially like 9 goes for the U-turn, because I don't really see games to make U-turn. Like after Global Launch, you have the shark fin and it never recovers. And there's very few games that I've seen that like are able to do the U-turn and actually go over what they did in
Super
Global Launch.
Yeah,
that's like literally like unicorn there. And the only thing, like, why is 9, not 10 out of 10, is that I think like your biggest challenge, as you said, is your metagame, to widen it even deeper, to like push on that progression and make it even more bold in a way that like, yeah, events and everything, they are great, but you need to keep this kind of very, very specific thin eyes of attention budget of like, you cannot go very deep on the system because they will turn the game like more core-ish, which you don't want to know, but you also want to kind of inject more flavor and more kind of different things into the metagame that would like increase that like level, sorry, day 30, day 90 kind of feeling. So
that wasn't that like what Mika mentioned, that Mr. Autofire is kind of doing on their end for long term.
That's like they added like all those different modes, different kind of side things, and like
social features and all the guilds and all of this fun stuff.
Yeah,
when the players are kind of,
the thing is that you need to get the right one. You cannot just overflow the game with 20 different features then so core that you lose the main player audience. So it's very delicate. It's not like oh yeah, just we go over the list, so a guild system, clan system, blah 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 blah. It doesn't work like that. every one of these can tank your retention actually down.
Yeah
and so. It's one of the pitfalls we're really trying not to fall into. Something I'd like to mention is that here at Madbox we really have this production philosophy where the team are in control of their game. So I, with my team, have ownership on this game. So we can, we finish to really know the game we're working on after 2 years on it. So we really try every time we approach a feature, not just import something from the market and say, oh, this could be added to the game, but really finding the purpose behind it and what new experience it would bring for the player and how does it actually connect with the existing game. Because the risk is often you add something new, you've seen the market doing something, you just add it to your game and it doesn't really make sense in your game. So this is taking a lot of time and a lot of iteration, but it's really like passionate flow. And it's the current conversation we're having now in the company are actually, how do we find these features that make sense, that will make the progression deeper? And of course, social is on the table, but we don't want just to copy paste a clan feature from another game. We want it to be connected to the systems and to the overall experience, so it makes sense. So it's a very interesting design and just creative work. But it takes a lot of time and energy. So you have to be passionate about what you do, definitely.
Oh my God, it was like amazing wrap for today. Arthur, thank you very much for coming. It was really, really great one. I actually enjoyed it quite
a lot. Yeah, it was great. Thank you so much for coming and great job.
Great job with the game.
That was a pleasure.
Nice. Thank you very much, listeners, as well. Please join our Slack channel. We already discussed Poker Champs there, and like you have quite a lot of fans there in our Slack groups, from what I can see. Definitely subscribe to YouTube channel, Spotify, give us a rating, whatever you want to do, please do. And see you next time. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.